Jugglers have a day, balloon twisters have a day, and magicians have a day. But clowns have an entire week. It's the first week of August, ladies and gentlemen. You know what that means. It's International Clown Week! Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whatever it is, wherever you are. Thanks for subscribing, streaming, or downloading and listening to us on your computer or MP3 player. I'm Austin Titchener, one third of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, and you're listening to this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast number 348, International Clown Week. Reed, I know this is a very, very special time for you. As a former Ringling Brothers Barnum and Bailey circus clown, does the first week of August have special resonance for you?
Year after year, month after month. No, it doesn't. It means nothing to me. I didn't even know it was International Clown Week.
Really? Until when?
I think you mentioned it, and then somebody on Facebook who I'd been a clown with Ringling mentioned it, and I go, oh, okay. I don't even remember when we were on the circus that it was mentioned. I'm sure it was, but I don't remember.
Well,
on the circus, every week is Clown Week.
Well, and I'm not sure exactly when I heard about it, but the most interesting fact about International Clown Week is that it was sort of began when President Richard Nixon.
One of our funniest presidents.
One of our funniest presidents declared the first week of August in 1971 National Clown Week in the United States. I think he only meant it to be that one week in 1971. But somebody has taken it upon themselves, and I'm looking here at the website, internationalclownweek.org, to say, you know what? It's International Clown Week every first week of August.
I declare this International Clown Week. Sock it to me.
Clang. Well, and it's so perfect that it's International Clown Week because we're now in our third week of rehearsing the Reduced Shakespeare Company's ninth stage show, The Complete History of Comedy Abridged. Now, Reed and I are writing it, and we're directing a non-Reduced Shakespeare Company production of it for its sort of very, very first workshop performances at a theater called Napa Valley Playhouse here in beautiful Napa, California.
Yeah, it used to be Dreamweavers, for those of you who live around here. Most of you don't, and that means nothing to you, so edit this out.
Gary Wright. Gary Wright, I think, ran that theater.
Yeah, and so it's the same cast that we workshopped the Ultimate Christmas Show Abridged with December year and a half ago.
Yeah, and two-thirds of the same cast from when the time we did the complete workshop, The Complete World of Sports Abridged at Sonoma County Rep.
Yeah, so it's Dodds Delzell and Dan Sasky and Chad Yarish who've been on the podcasts before. And I think it's going well. I'm pleased. I think last time we talked about it in a podcast, you and I talked in Chicago. We were writing sketches, but we didn't necessarily have sort of the overall picture of what it was going to be. And that's that's settled and it's settling in a nice direction. And about a week and a half into rehearsal, we invited people who were involved in the theater, friends, family, associates to come and hear a reading of the show. And the reaction to that was very good. And so that was heartening. And I'm pleased. I'm ready now to, it's only been about a week, but I'm ready to have another reading. But we have another week of rehearsing and tweaking to go.
Rehearsing and tweaking, yeah. And you were saying that you were with me in Chicago. That was about a month ago, 6 weeks ago, I guess, as we record this. And it was great that you came because I thought we sort of broke the back of of the show that week. Mm-hmm. You know, we knew we had a bunch of sketch ideas. We knew we had a lot of funny ideas, but we didn't really have a kind of a through line. As I think I've mentioned on the podcast before, you know, when we set out to write this show, I was having a hard time because I think all of our shows, no matter what the topic, American history, Shakespeare, literature, the Bible, all of our shows are essentially the history of comedy. So I knew what we were talking about in those shows. So how do you write a show about the history of comedy and talk about something else? But I think we kind of cracked that. And I don't want to kind of give away too many spoilers because people will want to come see whether we did or not.
This is all I'm going to say. WWRD.
Mm. Yes, that keeps me going as well. I agree.
So International Clown Week, tying it into the complete history of comedy abridged, it made me think, well, how do I define a clown? And I think it's comedy with a physical element to it. So I guess I think a circus clown, who you probably, unless it's a one-ring European circus, you're not going to hear what they're saying, or a Ringling Brothers, where it's a huge arena, you're not going to hear what they're saying, or the silent movie clowns. I think of that as the classic clown, which isn't to say clowns can't talk. I guess at the other end of the spectrum would be a stand-up comedian who, for the most part, it's all just words. So I wouldn't think of them as clowns. So to me, I don't know how you think of it, but I think of a clown as a physical comedian. It doesn't have to be strictly physical, but largely physical.
So Buster Keaton and Charlie Chaplin were clowns.
Oh, definitely.
By that definition.
Yeah.
What about, now, I was just yesterday, I was interviewed for the Folger Shakespeare Library. They have a podcast now, and they interviewed me for an upcoming podcast that they're doing on Shakespearean clowns. And it was great to be interviewed, even though I have no idea what I'm talking about in that regard.
Oh, that Will Camp, he slayed me.
What would you, do you know, how would you define the distinction between modern clowns and Shakespeare clowns?
Well, I don't know. I'm old, but I'm not that old. Well, I think, to be honest, I mean, Shakespearean clowns, I think of Shakespearean fools. Mm-hmm. And some of them are not all that funny. Some of them are very serious, even Touchstone and As You Like It, or the Fool and King Lear. I mean, I think of a lot of his clowns, I think of as fools who were truth tellers. I mean, this is something we touch upon in the show. But fools were given permission to tell the truth to power, which is sometimes funny, often not funny, often painful. So I think the people who are dressed like clowns tended to be not be as funny as just some of the characters, you know, more along the lines of, you know, some of the Molière lead characters who have some exaggerated characteristic, whether it's, you know, they think they're sick or they're greedy or, you know, or they're religious zealots. Mm-hmm. So, you know, Malvolio, who's just so dour. But yeah, in terms of the people who dressed like clowns, I don't think Shakespeare wrote them particularly funny. I don't think he meant to.
No, I know. That's interesting. Yes, I was saying the point I was making was similar to that, which is that the context of Shakespeare's plots and characters defined what his clowns were doing. And you mentioned Malvolio and Touchstone. Did you mention The Fool and Lear?
And Feste in Twelfth Night is not particularly funny.
Or the porter in Macbeth.
Right.
That was probably, you know, Will Kemp or one of Shakespeare's stalwarts.
Yeah, and he had this bit. Yeah. Oh, I do this funny knock-knock bit. Well, okay, let's put a porter into Macbeth. We need some, the murdering's going on. We're going to need some comic relief in here, so let's do it.
Exactly right. Well, and there is something related to, I mean, laughter is the release of tension,
right?
So you get tension by whatever, a setup and a development. You got everybody going, oh, I see where this is going, and you surprise them. Or you don't. You pay it off in the way they expect. But that's the same with horror, too.
Yeah.
That's the same with tragedy, because, oh, God, here's the tension. Oh, yes, and it's going exactly. So in that sense, it is easier. That's, we say in the Shakespeare show that Shakespeare's tragedies are much funnier than his comedies. And I think one of the reasons, that's a joke, but I think one of the reasons is the context of the tragedies is so serious, it's easier to get a laugh. You know, some of the basic tropes of comedy, the rule of threes, falling down, or the best and most important one, getting hit in the nuts. Mm-hmm. You know, these are comic tropes that are common to modern clowns and Shakespeare clowns, right?
Well, and that's what we find in, you know, writing the show, The Complete History of Comedy Abridged. It goes back to vaudeville. It goes back to silent movies. Now people, we trace the cream pie to the, you know, the silent movies. Well, that's because that's the first time, you know.
Right.
But we didn't have a recording of it before then. But, you know, they go back to Commedia in the Italian Renaissance. They probably even go back to the Greeks and the Romans, you know, oh, fart jokes, oh, how terrible. Except that, Chaucer and Mark Twain were using fart jokes.
Yes.
Yeah, you don't want to go overboard, but funny is funny.
But as I think is a point we make in the show, is that, yes, but, you know, Chaucer and Mark Twain, these are masters. You don't want to have farts in the hands of amateurs.
No, what's so funny about something you can blame on the dog?
This is David Koechner. You're listening to the Reduced Shakespeare Company's podcast. You just learned something, didn't you?
Where can you RSC the RSC? Our run of the complete works of William Shakespeare, abridged, revised, continues at the Leicester Square Theatre in London until August 17th, 2013. So catch us there if you can before we head back out on our fall UK tour. And then in addition to the UK, this fall we'll be bringing Shakespeare, all the great books abridged, the ultimate Christmas show abridged, and the new show, The Complete History of Comedy Abridged, to the US, Singapore, Hong Kong, and Cincinnati Playhouse in the Park. As always, the very best way to stay up to date about all of our worldwide performance dates is to sign up for the Reduced Reader, our email newsletter. Go to ReducedShakespeare.com and click on the link to subscribe and check out our touring page for specific box office, venue, and ticket information. So the first 2 weeks of this rehearsal process was very interesting because I was understudying the production of The Liar at the Writers' Theater in my town of Glencoe, Illinois. And the performances went to the end of July, and rehearsals for The Complete History of Comedy Abridged started in the middle of July. So, you know, we figured out that I would spend the first 2 weeks of rehearsals watching via Skype. And that was not terrible.
Well, the first week, we were doing table work. And that might surprise people that here we are a troupe and known for our physical comedy. Mm-hmm. But getting the script together, it's a matter of reading through it and then talking about it and then reading through just the first act and going through it quite meticulously and making changes and then reading through the second act meticulously and making changes. And then you and I spend 2 or 3 days kind of frantically rewriting and then we come back and we do it again. And so particularly, you know, it was just like you were there in that little box at the end of the table. We weren't moving around. There wasn't any blocking to worry about.
No, it was great. It was great.
It worked very well.
And many rehearsals of existing scripts will spend the first week just around a table, just reading, making sense of it, before the actors are having to worry about blocking or having to worry about projection or props or costumes or anything. It's just sitting around the table figuring out the script. Seems to me even more important for a new script, particularly one that's being developed right now. So that was really great. But even watching the second week of rehearsals when you began to put them up on their feet, I missed some nuances because I couldn't see faces very well, but certainly the broad strokes were there. And then, as you said earlier, we had a public reading in that second week of rehearsals, and so I was on Skype in a computer in the back of the audience. Although you greeted me, and everybody turned around and waved, and I waved, and it was just strange. I mean, what a brave new world. Speaking of Shakespeare, but it was great because I could hear the audience laughing or not laughing, and you led a great Q&A afterwards. So it's been a great process. Although I have to say, it's good to be here now.
Oh, it's great to have you here. I remember when we first started, we said, well, I wonder what the internet signal is going to be like. Thank goodness it was a great internet signal at Napa Valley Playhouse, and it really wasn't much of an issue as it turns out. And so we got much of it roughly blocked, and I think the timing of your arrival was good. So we've got sort of the broad strokes, and now we start to refine it. And it's also just a matter of, we were quite diligent about most days. Okay, well, let's meet via Skype at 11 and talk through what happened. But there's just something about just being around each other. When something occurs to you, you say it, and things happen a little more organically. But no, it is that modern technology was an amazing thing.
It is an amazing thing. Well, and one of the things that we do is it seems like we write our shows from the outside in. We get we have the topic. We get an idea of, oh, I got a funny idea for a sketch about this, or a sketch about this, or a sketch about this. And we put them together, and then we try to find a through line. And our three characters are archetypes, or types of clowns, I guess you would say. Mm-hmm. Reed, your character is we call him the enforcer, but he is possibly the capitano in commedia terms. I'm the smart guy, I'm the intellectual, I'm the professor or the dottore in commedia terms, and Dominic Conti, or in this production, Dan Sasky, is the Arlecchino, what we call the man-child.
Yeah, the Harpo, the Curly.
The Harpo, the Curly, yeah. But it's also, we also try to find, we reverse engineer the character motivations so that each character has a kind of a different journey through these script of sketches. And sometimes it's quite organic and wonderful. And sometimes it's kind of, in the words of Roger Rabbit, we do it that way because it's funny.
Yeah, sometimes. Once Once in a while, we'll be saying things that doesn't make any sense that our character would say. But you know what? In real life, people say stuff that, you know, people get so slavish. Oh, the character arc, it doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
Sometimes in life, it just doesn't make sense. It makes sense because it's funny. That tells us it makes sense.
Right. Yes. Right. If they're laughing, then it is making sense because everybody's understanding it enough to get it to laugh.
Yeah.
Well, and sometimes, you know, we have various things I think that we want to say in air quotes in this show, and probably some of the reasons why we wanted to do this topic in the first place. But you can't just come out and say those things, you know. You have to sneak your author's message in, and that's been fun too. Explaining to the cast, to the guys, you know, when the guy says, "Well, I wouldn't say that." Well, yes, you wouldn't. But in order for the scene to work, the character has to say that, and we've got to figure out a way that makes sense for you to say that, for your character to say that.
Yeah, and if it doesn't make sense to the audience, they won't laugh. They'll be sort of scratching their heads.
Right.
So, I think it's also interesting. We write sketches, and we kind of have an idea. Oh, this sounds like something Austin would say. This sounds like something I would say. And those things get all switched around during
all
rehearsal as the characters' points of view become clearer. It's just like, oh, yeah, no, he wouldn't be making that argument. You know, as the script develops, and as you say, reverse engineer kind of the framework, what's everybody's point of view, who says what gets switched around, and then sometimes you have to rewrite it to make it sound the way they would say it.
Yeah. I was expecting there to be a lot more physical stuff in this show.
And it's funny because even early on you were wondering if the basic outfits were kind of clowny.
Yeah.
You know, and it's funny because I'm the clown, and I go, well, that's one aspect of comedy. I mean, there's clowning, and there's physical comedy, but there's stand-ups, there's Shakespeare, there's Aristophanes, there's Plautus, there's Chekhov, if you want to call those comedies.
Yeah.
We do, for the sake of comedy. That's a nice little sketch.
Yeah.
There are some definitely strictly physical bits. Mm-hmm. There's two or three, I mean, at least, I guess at least three with no dialogue. But, I think there's bits where we're doing stand-up, so that's not particularly physical. There's bits where we're doing a vaudeville double act, which isn't particularly physical.
Mm-hmm.
You've written a nice sort of bittersweet song, which is nice and still. So, it's an interesting combination.
Well, it's very verbal. I mean, I tend to, that might have been the thing I was afraid of, because I tend to write more verbal stuff and less physical stuff, but it was... The other thing that was difficult for me is that I must say this about every new show we do. This is the largest topic we've ever taken on.
Well, actually, I was doing an interview recently. I told somebody, the journalist, this is what we're doing. They go, is it possible your topics seem to be getting bigger? But I don't know.
Well, it does seem big. And again, there's not a, unlike the Bible, which has two testaments, old and new, boom.
Mm-hmm.
Or American history, where it's done in order, you know, chronological order. You know, there is no organizing principle to the topic.
Yeah, we have to come up with one. Much like we do with all the great books.
And Hollywood.
Yeah. There isn't a necessarily logical beginning and end. In Hollywood, you could go chronologically, but most of it was going to be more recent movies, and that didn't make sense. And books, again, books we tried to do chronologically, and just the way the sketches were, it didn't... we'd have too many slow sketches at the beginning and then a bunch of fast ones later, and we threw that out pretty early. It just says it's not going to work chronologically.
Well, and that's that gives us an enormous amount of freedom to be able to say, let's lead with a really funny sketch, and maybe then another pretty funny sketch, and then put a not really very funny sketch second or third, you know?
Yeah, I don't think of it that way so much. I mean, that's the way it ends up, but I think really, I know we've talked about this in a podcast before, but Paul McCartney says, design your set in the shape of a W, which is you start high, it can kind of dip in the middle, and then you finish high just before, you know, in the middle of the set, or in our case, intermission, and then start the second act high, and you can have kind of a dip, and then finish big. And so I don't consciously say, oh, this sketch is no good, let's put it in the middle.
No, I know.
But I think you and I both think, okay, we need to start with a bang. We need a couple of good things right at the beginning.
Yeah.
And then we also know that we need to finish. And so it sort of gravitates. The best things tend to gravitate, at the beginning and the end of each act.
To the corners.
Yeah.
Well, I think we've learned, being you know, healthy American men, that we like endings.
And scene.
That's it for this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast. Send us your comic tropes via email to feedback@reducedshakespeare.com. You can also post comments on many of our website pages, and you can post reviews of the podcast on iTunes. You can interact with other fans at our website and our Reduced Shakespeare Company Facebook fan page. You can also become a subscriber to our YouTube channel or become a twit. Follow us on Twitter @Reduced. You can find easy links to all these social networks at our website, reducedshakespeare.com. Thanks, as always, to webmaster Matt Rippey, hemi-semi-demi-professional fool Matthew Croak, music by John Weber and Garage Band, and this week by Pier Bufano and his band Circestra. Find more of their great music on iTunes and at their website, circestra.com. That's CIRKESTRA.com. Our random fan shout-out this week goes to Lysander Snipes. Wow, what a great name. One of our Twitter followers. No reason. It's just random. Special thanks to David Koechner. I can't wait to see Anchorman 2. And thanks very much to you for listening. I'm Austin Titchener, 348/1044 of the Reduced Shakespeare Company. This podcast is a production of the Reduced Shakespeare Company. Reducing expectations since 1981. Go to reducedshakespeare.com for performance dates, actor bios, email newsletters, and so much less. So much less. So much less.